This is episode 296 of the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey guys, what is going on? I am excited to deliver another masterclass for you here. My name's Alex Pardo. If this is your first time listening in, welcome. I appreciate you. Thank you for tuning in. And my goal and my expectation is to completely over-deliver for you and pack this episode and future episodes with as many nuggets as possible to help you in your business and in your journey for freedom. So guys, today I have my buddy, Mr. Will Hull on. Will is a very successful investor out of the Indianapolis market that last year did 160 transactions. Okay, so we're going to really do a deep dive on how him and his team were able to do that. We talk about the people on his team. We talk about the marketing they did in order to do that, what some of the challenges were. We talk about partnerships, and how things... Will has gone in a different direction as of the beginning of this year. We talk about partnerships, when to partner with someone, what were some lessons learned, etc. And then we talk about, you get to a certain point in your business where the money's great. And yes, we're striving for more money and we're striving for to grow businesses, etc. But it's more about impact and legacy and giving and helping. And so we end the show talking about that. And I think, the conversation was very effortless. We have a lot of commonalities. And I think it'll be cool for you guys to kind of listen to Will's journey, how he got started. This is something that he ventured out 5 years ago. And is when he got involved in this business, and he started part time. He was working medical sales, and he experienced success pretty quickly, doing 4 to 6 deals on his own part time. And so we talk about that, and I think there's a lot that you're going to be able to take from this episode and apply to your business. So, without further ado, let's talk to Will Hull. Will, welcome to the Flip Empire Show, brother. It's great having you on.
Hey man, thanks for having me. I'm always. Always good to do these things and hop on with like-minded people. So excited.
Yeah, buddy. So am I. And you come with so much experience and knowledge and somebody that's out there just doing really big things in your market. And so I know we're going to dive into that. But for people listening, Will and I got connected at a mastermind. Will, this was probably, 6-9 months ago that you and I first met, right?
Yeah, it was. It was back in June of 18. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Man, I felt like I had an instant connection to you, and just, the conversation just, it was very effortless. And we, we had a lot of commonalities as far as just business and, what we've done and where we're going. So it's really good having you on, brother. So for people that don't know you or haven't maybe just, don't know your story, how did you, I always like to kind of, I know a lot of podcast people ask, man, tell me about yourself, how you guys started in the business and all that. But I think it gives people some context and some perspective so that, they understand. Obviously, anybody I have on the show, I think is somebody that I truly believe you should be listening to and somebody that you can learn from. But how did you get involved in this business and how far back was that?
Yeah, so I got started, it'll be 5 years in June when I first got started in this business. So I feel like I've been in it for a while and then I feel like I've just gotten started all in the same. So, I started in the business. I was working full time. I was in medical device sales and I was working full time and just kind of got into it on a part-time deal thinking, I'd flip a couple houses, and have some rentals. And really didn't really set out to be any big company or have employees or be this monster entrepreneur. I was just kind of looking for a little side hustle and using the flip money for rentals was the end game. And so I kind of did that, for a while, part-time. I did it for probably close to a year and it just kept growing and growing and growing. And I was loving it. I was basically doing it in the nights and the weekends and wherever I could find time. And, it was awesome. It was having a lot of fun. I was seeing that, okay, I can make some money doing this. I was primarily wholesaling and then flipping on the side a few here and there. And So after a year, I decided to go full time in it. I left a good job. My wife was still working full time, so we had that security blanket, and we started doing it full time. I started just, you know, picked up my advertising. I hired a lady to help me part time, just with all admin stuff, follow up calls, all that good stuff, so I could be out in the field doing all the buying.
Okay.
And then we just kind of, we grew our team one by one every year. I just kind of slowly started backing myself out. And now we've got a team of 8 or 9 people or so. And we did about 170 deals last year. We're in Indianapolis market. So, you know, we do about 60% wholesaling, and the other 40% are rehabs. Okay. Is kind of our business mix.
That's awesome, man. So 170 deals. We're going to get into we're really going to like roll up our sleeves and do a deep dive on that. Cause I know people want to hear about, you know, anybody that does 100 plus deals, they have to have strong people in place. They have to have their systems dialed in. And so that's no easy feat for most people. So I want to kind of backtrack a second, because there might be some people listening that are looking to get started or have gotten started, but they've been faced with some challenges. Maybe they still have a full-time job. And for you, not to say that you didn't have challenges, because I don't know all the ins and outs of your story, but it sounded like you came out of the gate swinging and had some success, I should say, while you were still working medical sales, right?
Yeah, medical sales. Yeah.
Okay, got it. So did you, how were you able to kind of make that transition from, you know, starting to do some deals part-time and then eventually saying, okay, now's the time to go full-time? Because I think some people are listening and they're kind of struggling, you know, and they're just not 100% sure if they should dive in full-time, or even the ones that are working part-time just can't seem to gain some traction. So kind of if you can speak to those folks.
Yeah. You know, I just go back to a guy told me when I first got started in this that, no matter the number that you're going to advertise, whatever that number is, he goes, it does matter, but it doesn't matter. He goes, it just matters that you're consistent in the marketing. And so I just went in it very consistent, very small numbers of advertising. And, you know, I started doing 1 or 2 deals a month. And for me, I did start to ramp that up. But I think what I was able to do in my business, Alex, not everybody has this luxury, is I had a good job. I had a good paying job that I didn't have to rely on this business to feed my family. So everything I made, I just dumped back into marketing, kept compounding it. And, you know, it started to add up. And so I didn't pull any money at all from the business. And so I had this nest egg of money. My wife still had her job there. And then I ramped myself up. I was doing about 4 to 6 deals a month. That's all I was really doing. That's when I said, look, I've done this long enough. I've done it for a year. I've got some money saved up. I've got a little bit of processes and systems. I've made some connections. I'm consistently doing 4 to 6 deals. And I felt comfortable that, hey, if I do this full time, I can ramp up to 8 to 10 deals. And that's all I really needed at the time. And that's all I was interested in. All I was wanting to do was replace the income that I was making on my full-time job.
Yeah.
As long as I could do that and be at home with my family and do all that, I was good with it. And so I think, you know, I think doing it part-time is a great way to do it. And it took, now look, I worked nonstop. I mean, it was a long year. It was hard on my family. It was hard on my wife. It was hard on me. I mean, you know what it's like. I mean, you work all day and all night I'm running comps, and then weekends you're running appointments the whole time. So, But it paid off. But the biggest thing was just being consistent through that whole period.
There's so many nuggets to really unpack. Just a few that jumped out. Number one, I 100% agree with you that consistency is the key with everything. You know, sometimes I talk to investors and they ask, hey, what's working for you? And I say, you know, direct mail and cold calling, and now we're getting heavy into text message marketing, et cetera. And they're like, they're expecting something really sexy or some new marketing channel. And I'm like, what makes it work is the consistency factor. So I love that you said that. Number two, by the way, the fact that you were doing 4 to 6 deals a month by yourself part-time is highly impressive. But I'm glad that you followed it up with the fact that, hey, I was sacrificing. I was putting in the time. I rolled up my sleeves because I think that's what separates people that succeed and break through from part-time to full-time. versus those that kind of just dabble. If you're dabbling and you're just trying to like, you're sort of into it, but you got, you're half pregnant, right? You got 1 foot in, 1 foot out. It's going to be challenging to gain some traction. And so if you find yourself at that point of your life where you want to do this business full time, you got to commit and you just got to dive in, and you're going to have to roll up your sleeves and put in that time until you have a breakthrough. So, thank you, man. So fast forward us now to, you said last year you did 160-ish deals or so. I know you had a partner. So what did the business look like? And we'll kind of get into like the, you know, there's been a little bit of a transition, but what did the business look like last year for you? And how were you guys able to do 160 deals?
So basically we, our business consisted of, obviously myself and my partner. I handled more of the operation side. He handled more of the sales side of the business. So he did, and then it would underneath that, as I had we have an operations manager. So she runs all the day-to-day stuff, you know, whether it's our private money, any hard money lenders that we're using, she's getting all that paperwork done. So, you know, utilities on and off, insurance on and off, all the paperwork that goes behind the scenes to make that many transactions happen, working with title companies and so forth. And then we had three acquisitions people that go out in the field, obviously buying the houses. Then we have a inside sales person. We now have two inside sales people. So we have two inside sales people that all they do is they pound the phone calls, and they're following up with these people, and they're we kind of started the clock at day 14. So basically our acquisitions people had 14 days to get a deal closed.
Okay.
And then after that, our inside salespeople picked it up, that because we just had so much volume coming in that realistically our acquisitions people couldn't get, you know, couldn't keep up with that volume. So, and then we had a dispositions person, who obviously sold all of our deals, wholesale deals and turnkey deals. She worked with our turnkey clients as well on the turnkey side. And then a project manager that manages the projects and the rehabs. And then we have a VA, a full-time VA as well that works with us, that does anything from taking inbound calls to doing brochures. And she helps our dispositions lady a lot as well. So yeah, that was kind of the team that we had put in place. And, you know, we didn't have the perfect systems, but we had enough that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, flowed pretty smoothly.
So I think, Will, that's really encouraging to hear for a lot of people, even myself, man, that you feel like you didn't have the perfect systems, because no system is perfect, right? There's always going to be challenges, and you should always be looking to improve and make your systems more efficient. But you guys still were able to knock out 160 deals. What do you attribute that to? Was it the people on your team? Was it just a consistency factor with the marketing? And if your answer is marketing, I'd love to kind of dive in. But if not, what would you kind of put your finger and say, hey, these are the one or two things that really drove that volume of deals and the revenue that you guys generated last year?
Well, it goes back to a couple different things. I mean, we did have multiple exit strategies, you know, that we also built a pretty good we work and we buy off a lot of other wholesalers.
Okay.
And those relationships and partnerships were huge for us. So, you know, being a wholesaler, like, yeah, we wholesale 60%, we rehab 40%, we do some turnkeys, but it's kind of like at my heart is always going to be a wholesaler, you know, and I know how to work with those guys, because I remember when that's all I was doing, and I remember how, you know, people used to treat me when I was in the other positions, and how I used to go to guys because I knew they were quick and they were fast and they were easy, and I knew sometimes I'd leave a couple grand on the table, but sometimes a for sure thing's better than, you know, a what if. You know, and you know, how some of those deals go. So we built a lot of those from those wholesalers, a lot of key relationships and partnerships. But it goes back to exit strategies. We would do land contracts, and by land contracts, I mean we would be the bank on some deals, right? Depending on the area and the house. We could say, okay, this doesn't make sense to wholesale. Doesn't really make sense even as a rental. The numbers don't work. But if I'm the bank, I love this area because I know I've done a lot of land contracts, and I can be the bank over here, and I'll get 10% down. I'll get somebody that's good in there, and then, you know, I'll be the bank for 12 years on it on a healthy interest rate. And so that may be one exit strategy. Turnkey may be another one where we're like, okay, this would be a great turnkey. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to wholesale it, but we'll we could go ahead and turnkey this. And then we also had our own holds where we just hold them, you know? And so we had a good amount of capital to play with, and we could take things down and we can maneuver things around. I think it's just being flexible and being adaptable, and being able to really manage the cash flow that allowed us to get in and out of deals, you know, quickly and effectively. And I just think the more exit strategies you have and the more of those partnerships and relationships that you build, you can do more deals, especially when the market's this tight, because some deals just don't work to wholesale. There's just not enough spread in them when you get them. And we used, Alex, what we did was we wholesaled a lot of our own stuff, and a lot of the stuff that we bought from other wholesalers was where a lot of our rehabs, our turnkeys, and our buy and holds would come from, because the margin was already squeezed out of it. But there was still enough margin in there for us to do something with it, to flip it or to rehab it.
Sure. I was going to ask you, on the properties that you bought from wholesalers, did you guys ever re-wholesale the property out, or was it always a turnkey or rehab?
We would every now and then, you know, we would see something somebody didn't, you know.
They left a lot of meat on the bone there.
A lot of meat on the bone. They're like, a lot of times that would come in these revitalization areas where somebody just doesn't know, you know, when I first started, I wouldn't have known some of that stuff, and they just underpriced it. Right. Yeah. But no, I would say 80, 90% of the time we're actually going to be doing something with the end product. There's usually not enough spread to just turn around and flip it. But every now and then, dude, we'd get lucky.
Very, very cool, man. Well, I'm glad to hear you say exit strategies is one of those main drivers for the volume that you guys did. I just had Ken Holmes. I don't know if you know him. He's a big creative deal structure guy. Yeah. And one of the tips that he shared that I really resonated with me is, I think wholesalers, when they get a contract, they get so anxious and they become a motivated seller and they want to market the contract or the deal. They want to put it out and they want to close on it fast. One of the things he shared was, every time you get a deal under contract, pause and ask yourself, what is the best exit strategy? How can I maximize the profit and the revenue on this deal? You know, is it something I can take down with my self-directed, or is it, you know, there's just so many exit strategies, and I'm glad to hear you kind of piggyback on that without even knowing that, you know, that's kind of what he touched on. It seems like that really worked for you guys.
Yeah, it did. It did. And that's something that my old partner really brought to the game. It really changed my mindset, because a lot of times I'm just like, yeah, let's just go for the quick buck. And
yeah,
sometimes you have to do that, right? And you know you're leaving money on the table, but it is what it is. But yeah, it really set, you know, hey, let's to your point, let's take a little bit of time and let's wait 3 months and make an extra 10 or 12 on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So of the 160, I don't know if you have the numbers in front of you there, what percentage of those were deals that you bought from wholesalers? And then if you can kind of break down, hey, this percentage came from these marketing channels, because I'm curious. The ones that you bought from wholesalers, obviously, that's just relationships. That's just networking. But where did the bulk of the other deals come from a marketing perspective?
Yeah, so that came from our direct mail. I'm part of a Homebusters franchise here in Indianapolis.
I didn't know that, dude.
Yeah. Okay. So that is where we did all of our marketing from. And that is, so we did 125 deals from that channel. And we did about 43 of those deals from other outside sources, from other wholesalers or people bringing us deals.
Okay. And the 120 that came straight from the direct mail from within the Homebusters franchise?
Yeah. PPC, SEO, and direct mail. Yeah. So internet and direct mail came from that. So.
Okay. Got it. Yep. Was direct mail, obviously you guys, you know, people talk about the fact that response rates are down and direct mail is getting more challenging for you guys. Obviously that wasn't the case. How do you, because so many people I talk to and they're struggling with direct mail. It's a volume game, right? They're having to send out so much mail. The cost per lead is going up. The cost per deal is going up. What are your thoughts on that and how you guys were able to make that work?
It is getting crazy out there, and we're seeing it, and the cost per deal just keeps rising on us. You know, I don't know. I guess it kind of goes back to, being consistent again, and really to what we've really been good, what we've really done, that's really, really helped us was our inside sales team. was to really solidify that process and to really get that nailed down. We had basically what we would call a frontline lady that would hop on the phone after 14 days. She brought in 27 deals for us last year that we probably wouldn't have gotten. I think that, yeah, you can throw a bunch of money, you can do a bunch of marketing, your acquisitions people, you can run them like crazy, but what's happening on the back end? And that's something I'm still trying to perfect, is because I think the inside sales, and I know we've talked about this in some of the masterminds and stuff, it's what happens after those 30 days, 20 days after the appointment, I think is where there's a lot of gold.
Yes.
In those leads. And I think to me, that's where we were like, okay, you know, it's not the good old days where leads are cheap and you get a bunch of them. Right. And you can be kind of lazy on the follow-up. Now you really got to be efficient. Now you really got to get dialed in the follow-up system. And I think that's where it helped us generate those extra leads, which is we kept tweaking it until we got better and better and better.
Well, you nailed it. You can't, in this market, I think it's a mistake to just throw money at marketing and expect that to fix your problem. You know, one of the things we did in December was I hired a part-time lead audit manager where she listens to our calls. So you call it an inside salesperson. We call it a lead manager. Same thing, basically.
Yeah.
She listens to a certain percentage of her calls. You know, we just dig into every lead, and we're realizing that we're leaving opportunities on the table. You know, she'll listen to a call and say an appointment should have been set up there. That shouldn't be in the long-term follow-up, you know, and appointments that we go on that the acquisitions manager doesn't get, we do a post follow-up where we contact the seller and a different person. We try to bridge the gap. And if you do that, you're going to pick up deals that, you know, because the most expensive lead you need to generate is the one that you don't have.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's so focused on just throwing money at marketing, and then you have gold in your CRM.
Yeah.
You got to ask yourself, are you really squeezing you're getting the most juice out of that orange, so to speak?
Well, we found, I think you bring up a good point with a different person, is like, you know, because I've been both sides of the shoe, on it. And it's like, okay, you go and you build this really good rapport with this person, and you're close, right? You're close on this deal, but you can't make it happen. And to your point, we'd have someone do a follow-up call that would be almost like a service call. Well, how was your experience? Did they show up on time? Same thing you're talking about. Were you able to put a deal together? No, we were off. Oh, well, and what we found is these people would open up more to this person who they thought was just taking a survey than maybe hurting the feelings of this person that they spent 2 hours with on the couch.
That's right. That's right.
And man, it's just like, it's just amazing. It's nothing that our acquisitions people didn't do right or wrong, but it's just a different energy and a different feel. So I agree with you 100%. I think, we got to do a better job. What happens is we do these things good and then we get really busy and things get backed up. And so I think the inside, I was just talking to our business coach. I want to make that just like I want to really hone in on that in 2019. Like, I want to perfect the inside sales deal so I don't have to keep throwing money out, and so we don't have to keep chasing things around, and we just get that dialed in. You know, that's going to be a big focus of mine.
That's right, man. I want to kind of circle back to something you said. You said your inside sales rep picked up about 27 deals or so that you're not sure if you would have gotten. Specifically, was that through the follow-up system? And if so, I know it's challenging without a visual, but what does your follow-up system look like so that somebody can kind of, you know, see what an operation that did 160 deals last year and say, okay, well, that's kind of compare it in a positive way. Like, hey, where does my follow-up system lack and how can I improve it?
Yeah. So basically what happens is, like I said, our acquisitions people basically have 14 days to get a deal closed. And after that, if our inside sales lady takes over. So there's like different tiers of our inside sales people. We basically have three different people in inside sales. We have one who's just a killer over the phone. She's in the mortgage business. She's been in car sales. Like, she's good over the phone. And she can do the face-to-face and do all that. But where her gold is over the phone and really working with these people and getting them. Because a lot of our sellers are all good people. But typically, there are a lot of them are procrastinators. That's why they're in these positions, right?
Yep.
And so they need help making a decision sometimes. So she was really, really good at gapping that bridge there. So after day 14, she takes over and she will work that lead. Depending on the lead, she may work that thing for 30 days. It may be a one that's not worth her time that she kicks down to the next person in line and the next person in line. And we hit these people every 30 days. Yeah. Somebody's touching these people every 30 days.
And that's with a phone call, text message, email.
All of it. But you know what? A lot of it was phone to phone. I mean, text message to engage them to get on the phone. But I've always said to all of our people, man, it's just hard to do deals over the phone and versus email. It's good to re-engage them. But she got them on the phone. She bridged the gap. She talked to them more. And some of these things, she had to talk to them 7 or 8 times, you know? And so, you know, I read a quote the other day. The average sale takes 12 touches. You know, I think in this business, we get spoiled a little bit. I don't know that it takes that many, but sometimes
I've always heard the number was 7, but yeah, I mean, the point of the matter is nobody, like, in every industry is different, but you got to just, man, we don't take people. We don't mark the lead, the status as dead or not interested until they tell us to go kick rocks and never call me again.
Yes.
Otherwise, it stays in our system in a follow-up.
You just don't know. And they honestly may have no intention of ever selling, and then all of a sudden pain hits. And it could be, dude, in these databases, that could be 3 or 4 years later.
I mean, brother, you kind of stole my thunder. Last year, we closed the deal. We made, I think it was like 38 and change, just shy of 40 grand. The lead came into Podio January 2014. We closed it last year. 4 years we had been working that lead inside of Podio. And so, you know, I mean, that's a pretty big deal for, you spent a lot of time on that lead, but you just never know.
You don't. And I think the thing is too, if I look back at her deals and I go through them, a lot of these deals were like 17, 18. And for Indianapolis, by the way, like that's a pretty good margin. We buy houses for like, you know, that much money, you know? So, I mean, they were healthy spreads. And the older the lead was, the more profitable it got because no one else is touching them. No one else is talking. The competition has faded.
Yeah.
So now we got that leverage in that position to, you know, to be there and to help them. And that tends to pay off for us. The follow-ups that we get that are really inside the 30 days, we feel like sometimes they're less profitable in some cases because I think we're getting aggressive and we feel like there's competition. where these, we didn't have that.
Will, I just had a thought right now. This literally just came to me like within the last 30 seconds. I'm going to toss it at you and see if you think it's a crazy idea. But I don't know about you, but our inside salesperson, who we call a lead manager, she works 8 to 6.
Okay.
We have never had somebody in that particular position following up with our leads in the early evening. Like I'm talking 6 to 8, 6 to 8:30 p.m. Have you ever tested that? And does your inside salesperson ever follow up at night? Because we've never done that. And it just hit me right now. I'm like, I wonder if I should consider hiring a part-time person or slightly tweaking her schedule to see if she would connect with more people in the early evening.
I think it's a great idea. Matter of fact, the new person we just hired in this department is going to work 11 to 8. Okay. So I think 8's kind of cut off, right? Before you probably...
pissing somebody off.
Yeah, but I do, especially because our clientele that we deal with, there are a lot of them are blue collar people, and they're working. And when they work, they're not like you or I at work where we have access to cell phones and that's okay. You know, they're working at a job where they are hard to get a hold of, and you know, for whatever reason. So I think it's a phenomenal idea. I haven't tested it. We just started doing it. Because of that scenario. So I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea. And I just think back to when I was a buyer, that's when I tried to catch people a lot of times. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it stands to reason that people, you know, granted some people have night schedules or whatever, but by and large, I think most people are home with their families. You know, it's like we recently started our new acquisitions guys now door knocking and I've heard through the grapevine and it just makes sense. If you think about it, our previous acquisitions guy was having a hard time. He was door knocking in the afternoon and he kept telling me, I'm not connecting with the homeowners. I'm either connecting with tenants or nobody's home. And then it hit me and I started talking to people. Saturday mornings, the connect rate is going to be a lot higher with door knocking, you know, 9 to 12, Saturdays and Sundays. Right. And the same kind of logic applies here.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And I think it's a great idea, dude. I mean, now that you're saying it, I'm like writing this down, right?
So. Yeah, I'm actually doing the same, man. So, well, brother, I want to kind of start to wind down the show and talk a little bit, if you're open to it. I know last year, obviously, you had a partner. And then, you know, I think January, things kind of flip-flopped a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about, I don't even know what happened, because that, but what was it? You got into business with a partner, and you can kind of share the story from
Yeah, so great guy. So I got into, basically him and I were doing a lot of deals together. I was wholesaling primarily and doing the occasional flip, and he was primarily flipping everything, doing all rehabs with an occasional wholesale. So I kind of had the team, the process, and the systems. He had a lot of the connections with contractors and different vendors and money sources, as well as my private money. So we're like, man, and we just worked naturally good together, right? I mean, we're like, man, you know, this naturally feels good. This is not a buddy from high school. This is not a guy I know from church. This is just a guy that I've done business with. And so it was a complete business partnership. And so we're like, yeah, let's do it. So we did it. We put together, we kind of combined my team. He had an acquisitions guy. We brought him on. We grew it a couple different people. And we kind of took off and really just started running with it. And we started having a lot of fun. And there's a lot of value to that partnership. And we did that for about 2 years.
Okay.
We set it up really, really nice. So we didn't hold any properties together, right? You know, maybe three or four that we bought with tenants in it. But he had his own buy and holds. I had my own buy and holds. It was just basically his LLC owned half, my LLC. And every month we distribute the profits and empty the account, right? Fill it back up, empty it. So it was a very clean deal. What I found was what I was doing is we got to a path where, hey, I kind of want to go this direction with the business. Okay. I'm kind of like, hey, I'd like to go this direction. And it just wasn't matching up. And probably two guys who want to kind of go in similar directions but different ways of going there. And that was the tough thing about partnerships is it is kind of like having, I'm not going to say a boss, but there is somebody that you always got to be, you got to ask, hey, can we do this? Should we do this? And that's tough. That was tough for me. I learned that very early that, man, you know, that was very tough. And him and I never got one argument, never had fallouts. Great guy, good guy. It's just, I really wanted to get on this buy and hold rampage. And I spent so many years not doing that and passed up the opportunities because I was constantly trying to build the cash and build the team and build the business. Mm-hmm. And now I'm at a good cash place in a good state where I'm like, okay, I want to really ramp up. And I had raised some private money and I wanted to use that for that. And so it just became clear after discussions, it's like, hey, let's help, you know, let's divide this thing up, still do deals together, still work with each other. And I think within 60 days we had it pretty much dissolved. I mean, that's how quickly we were able to do it. And we put his team together, my team helped train some of his team. We still work together and talk to each other. Right. So yeah, it's just more of the longevity of it, of doing different business ventures that I might want to tap into, whether it's apartments that, you know, somebody may or may not, he may not be interested in, I may be in. So that's what I found. So I, you know, because there's a lot of talk about partnerships in real estate, especially more long-term stuff. And I think they're awesome. And I think they're great, but I think everybody, I would do it again. I'm glad I did it. I think we both learned a ton from it and we both are better now because of it. He's got more processes and systems than he ever had. I've got more construction and contacts that way than I ever had. So we both walked away better from that standpoint. I just always encourage everybody to get into a business partnership with somebody. Is it something that can be dissolved in 60 to 90 days?
Having an operating agreement in place and just making sure that you guys are on the same page, that if somebody gets hit by a bus or somebody wants to buy out the other, or you have a, you know, just a different vision going forward, which was the case. So that's great advice, because I think especially a lot of new people, they end up meeting someone at a rear. They just connect with someone and they decide to combine resources. And next thing you know, they're business partners. And partnerships can be great, but they can be very, very challenging.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think what was so great about our partnership was, is although we were good friends by all means, we didn't hang out on the weekends. You know, we didn't do different things. Like, you know, he had different interests. It was a business partnership that we had. And I don't want to take the human aspect out of it, that we weren't good friends and we didn't talk and we didn't enjoy each other's company. That's not it. But I, to your point, the reason we got into business together because our weaknesses and strengths matched up and mirrored up pretty well, not because we were buddies or we knew each other.
Got it.
So, very cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you guys parted on good terms, and it seems like, you know, he's in a good place. Yeah. You're in a good place. What's the plan here as we start to kind of, you know, wrap up the show, put a bow on it? What's the plan here for 2019 now that you're, you know, cause I'm assuming your team kind of, you know, you got a much smaller team now.
Actually, I got the same team. So,
oh, dude, okay. So nothing has changed. Or is it team is
good? Yeah, no. So, so we kind of worked all that, but yeah, and we've actually picked up a couple of new people. So we're rolling, man. So we didn't miss a beat. So, you know, I think the big thing for me, as I look back and I'm looking back at my goals now is, you know, we want to get, let me be honest with you. Okay. I'll be honest. Please, with you listening, right. So I get really, you know, you get on this Facebook, we get on these masterminds and I love them and they're great, but man, they're distracting, right? Like, so I'm like, apartments, you got mobile homes, you got rentals, you got flips. And so I feel like I really want to get back to the basics this year and really, really get the basics. I want to do a little bit of apartment stuff, but not more where I'm more on the money side of the deal. Right. Yeah. And putting money into it. We'll be up to 50 some rentals, pushing 60 rentals by the end of this year. I want to bring property management inside. I want to bring a CFO inside to help me run the business, especially from a capital standpoint as well as we start to grow. I've already got, they always say have somebody on the bench. I've got a CFO on the bench that I'm trying to position at the end of October. I'd like to get that. So, by the end of the year, we'd like to have property management inside house, get our CFO in place, and I'd like to get a sales manager in place. And I think that, and we're going and we're looking at Cincinnati. Matter of fact, Joe Fairless podcast tomorrow, he's got a great meetup in Cincinnati. So that's the secondary market that we're looking into. So our goal is hopefully by the second quarter, we can be in that market. Easy drives, an hour, 45 minutes from Indy. Same typical kind of thing. So we're looking to grow. I'm excited, but I want to make sure I'm doing it with intention and with purpose. And, you know, I've seen some of the things that you on Facebook with your mission trip that you went on. Like, you know, I keep reminding me and my wife started Dent Foundation, a foundation. And we just started it just to let us know this is in 10 years, I want to have a bunch of rental properties. I want to have 360 rental properties in 10 years. That's my goal. And that sounds big and the number that it'll produce is big, but I just said it's three a month. That's it. If I just do three a month for 10 years, I'll be 50 years old and I'll have this. And I'll be able to solely work on this foundation. Not solely, but I will spend 50% of my time. Sure. Yes. To hopefully be in this foundation and be a part of it and do these mission trips. And that's what fuels me. And that's what I think that once you hit a certain point in your business that it's not the money, it's not the rent, it's not rentals, how many rental houses, it's what all that can do to really, you know, build out what I call God's plan for me, which I don't know what that is yet, but I'm trying to listen to it, be prepared for it, and to make an impact in this world. And I don't know that I'm gonna. A lot of people want to wait until they're older. Like I could be gone tomorrow. I don't want to wait 20 years to make my impact. I want to do it now. You know,
nah, brother, man, you're speaking my language. Like I said, when we met in June, you know, we connected, and these are a lot of the same commonalities we have. Is now creating an impact, and it's not to say we don't want growth and we don't want more money, of course, but it's more how can we impact others? What can we do with that? It gives us more freedom, more options, and I'm with you, man. I'm totally with you. One of the things that we're really talking internally is how can we, my life's purpose is impact, and it's adding value to others. And it's just, and I'm not crystal clear what that looks like yet, but I know that it surrounds and it involves people and helping. And so whether that's a mission trip or whether it's the holiday mastermind we do to benefit charity, or I'm not sure what it looks like yet, but we're in the process of figuring out how do we tie our business to a charity, to a purpose, so that X amount of, you know, revenue gets donated every single year. Yeah, man, we're on the same page. And I think if we continue to ask ourselves, how can God use us? How do we create more impact? Eventually the answers are going to come and doors are going to start opening up. So I encourage you to keep seeking and keep putting yourself out there, because I think it's awesome work, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I think that's where I get excited and motivated when I'm on Facebook and I see these people doing these things. It's just like, it's real. And I just get so excited. You know, it's like, I just want to know. I'm so anxious to know, like, what's my plan? What's my big purpose? What am I supposed to be called to do here? And who am I going to help? I told my wife, it's like, I'm always waiting for that person to knock on the door. Like, hey, I could, you know, it's like something, I need this. And you're like, oh, I've been waiting on you. You know, what do you need? I want to help you. So there's so many great, and Given Time is another one. I've been volunteering at Riley Children's Hospital for going on 15 years now, you know, and we do that once a week. And you know, so it doesn't have to be money. It can be time, you know.
Exactly.
But in matter of fact, it should be time. I mean, that's a big
problem. I was just going to say, you know what I found? It's so easy to stroke a check, and I'm not discounting that, because that's needed and that's huge.
Yes.
But when you roll up your sleeves and you get involved, it's crazy, man. I'll kind of wrap this up here. I went on this mission trip expecting to have an impact on people. Yep. Dude, they had an impact on me, a much bigger impact on me. And when you get involved and you donate time, it changes your perspective, and you just get, I don't know, man. It's like, I came back with my heart was just more full. It's hard to put into words, man. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. There's I know we got to wrap this up, but yeah, I think it was the owner of Hobby Lobby. I listened to him speak, and he said that, if you donate $20 million in your lifetime and that's all you did, that's great. There's, like you said, it's a purpose. He goes, but if you never spent time with the people, if you never spent time in their community, in their house, he goes, you missed it. Mm. You know,
I dropped the mic right there, man. Don't say anything else. Yeah, that's huge, dude. Right. So, hey, buddy, I really am grateful to have you on the show, man.
Awesome.
This, like I said, this has been super effortless. How do people connect with you, reach out if, you know, people want to potentially do some deals in your market or just kind of find out what you have going on?
Yeah.
Any particular place they should reach out?
Yeah. Just go to newparadox.com. That's NUPARADOX.com. And all of our information is on there. Our contact information is on there. You can email me directly or Amy, our dispositions person. So we're happy to talk to anybody. I love to talk to people about building and systems and teams. And so in any way I can help and make, like you said, make an impact, I'm glad to do it.
Fantastic, buddy. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you. Yeah. And guys, thank you for tuning in to this, this masterclass. Like I said, I knew, you know, having Will on was going to be something that was going to have an impact on you. I mean, cause he shared so many nuggets and so many lessons learned, and it's impressive because you've been at this, Will, you know, 5 years, and the fact that you were doing so many deals part-time. And so I think this type of show can really help people regardless of what level you're at in your business. So just take something that you heard here, put it to action, and just stay consistent. I think that's, aside from giving and all that and finding your bigger purpose, is consistency, I think is the theme of what, one of the things I got out of this episode. So thank you, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy. Well, guys, I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode, and reach out. Let us know if you need anything. We'll talk soon.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show, but we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text Empire to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.